Welcome to Spark Your Five podcast. Now, here's your host, Jazz. But before that, let's listen to the quote of the week.
The truth is the only thing that's ever going to be constant. And you can't fear what might happen to you if you were to tell the truth. Because what happens to you if you don't tell the truth is worse than telling the truth will ever be.
Everyone, welcome back to the show once again. It's Jazz here. Along with me is John, the man of many talents. Like every month, we try and give an update on the gold and silver, particularly the commodities, and touch on some of the other ones, but gold and silver being the main one. And with all the stuff that's happening in the world around inflation, we thought it might be worth touching on some of the ratios, like gold and silver ratio, also gold to real estate ratio. And John, welcome back, buddy.
Good to be back, Jazz. Thanks for having me again.
No, it's going to be like, when are we going to discuss property and bridge to bricks?
Yeah. We'll get to property today, I think, via gold.
Well, we have already kicked into gear. Yeah, maybe that should be the first chart to talk about, gold to real estate. So, John, before we actually start talking about the ratios, maybe help educate listeners a little bit on when they should be looking at ratios and what the ratios are going to help them with, whether it's the buying or the selling, or to understand that one asset class is more expensive than the other. I think that would be a good start, and then we'll lead into the actual ratios as well.
Let's set the scene if we're going to talk about ratios today. So the reason we look at ratios is because in a world of permanent inflation, so like the central bank's job is to make prices go up by 2% per year. That's the job of the central bank. So they're constantly pumping currency into the economy. And what it's doing is it's distorting wealth and the distribution of wealth, and it's distorting prices. So if you think about your house is probably doubling every 10 years, and that's an old adage, and everyone thinks that it couldn't possibly get any more expensive, and yet somehow it does. Mm-hmm. However, you haven't, unless you've done a renovation or added a story, or if every year your land gets 6% bigger, nothing's really happening to the house. What's happening is that your money is changing value. So we've sort of covered this on previous podcasts. So if there's inflation in the economy and house prices are going up, that's interesting. But also bread prices are going up, and so are movie ticket prices, and so are gold prices and wheat prices and oil prices. And so all prices are going up. So how do you know that your house is relatively more expensive when everything's going up in price? So that's why we have to look at ratios, and you have to look at really long-term ratios too. So you can't look at a five-year ratio and know if you're in a bull or a bear market. You have to look at really, really long-term ratios. So if you price the, so what you want to do is, because dollars, the currency that we use, dollars are a bit of a useless way to measure the value of something over long periods of time, because we know that our currency is losing value. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do is you have to measure stuff with stuff. And so you could measure house prices measured in bushels of wheat or barrels of oil or something real, but you can't measure it in dollars because dollars are getting deliberately inflated. Mm-hmm. So generally what people do is they measure, if you want to know what's happening to your property over long periods of time, you measure it in a standard unit of measure money, which is gold. Mm-hmm. And now if you don't measure it in gold, you're going to think everything's just going up all the time. So eventually, if it were true that houses just go up, one house would eventually buy the world. So that's not happening. It's just becoming relatively more expensive, relatively less expensive. So everything is not, house prices aren't just going up. They're stuck in a valuation channel, and they move between overvalued, undervalued, even though it feels like it's just going up in price. So that's why we look at ratios rather than just flat prices, because in nominal terms, everything's just getting more expensive. But in real prices, sometimes they're getting cheaper and sometimes they're getting more expensive.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question, John. Generally, when we see big increase in the real estate prices, right? There's always that cycle where in a particular year you see some stupid growth, whether it's 10% or whether it's 15%. I think the last we saw, I don't exactly remember the year, but probably it was 2016 or 17, whatever the year was, irrelevant. At that time, do you go back to the defaults, which is the ratios, to see, you know what, yes, real estate has gone up quite a lot, but what does it actually compare to in terms of the ratio with real money like gold and in youngster's case, Bitcoin? Just teasing on that.
Yeah, you did.
John's pretty young, but we're same age, about the same age.
Exactly. So if real estate is going up one year, it means that real estate is, you could say, dollars are losing value to real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else is losing, dollars are losing value to real estate. But mm-hmm. dollars are also losing value to movie ticket prices as well, mm-hmm. and gold. Mm-hmm. You raised there was a bull market between 2012 and 2016. Mm-hmm. Do you notice that in that time, properties in Sydney and Melbourne rose by about 40%. But mm-hmm. at the same time, the dollar lost about 40% of its value. The dollar went from about parity or about $1.10 in 2012
mm-hmm.
to 70 cents to the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we were in a massive property boom, but actually in real terms, it was just holding its purchasing power against a failing Australian dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So the dollar went down by 40%, real estate went up by 40%, and in real terms, real estate just held its value, which is kind of what you want real estate to do.
Yeah.
But it's kind of when currencies are being debased, and we're in the mother of all currency debasement now,
mm-hmm.
It plays tricks with your ability to perceive value. There's an old saying, it's probably Oscar Wilde, everything's Oscar Wilde, if you can't remember who said it, but it's something along the lines of, we know the price of everything but the value of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And measuring prices over long periods of time in gold rather than currencies means that you're getting to what the value is rather than the price, because the price, everyone can see that.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah. So now obviously there's a chart out there, which is the gold to REA, right? Real estate.
Yep.
Ratios. When would you go and look at that chart?
So the ratios move a lot more slowly. So you'd only look at a ratio chart twice a year, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't pore over these charts, but it gives you the best idea of where the momentum really is in a particular asset class. Mm-hmm. But it also gives you a historical perspective of whether something is cheap or expensive in real terms. And you can then say, okay, well, property's actually at 2008 levels, let's mm-hmm. say, which it is at the mm-hmm. moment. And then you can make a determination what you do.
Right, okay. So basically, if you are one of those investors who like to take the opportunity when it comes, basically some of these charts like gold to REA, real estate, can help you determine those cyclical moves that it might be time to sell this asset if it makes sense from after CGT and all the other stuff, and put the money, shift the money into gold and let it do its job and then come back. Is that right way of putting it?
So if you think of all assets as becoming overvalued, undervalued, but they're not all just going up permanently in price. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to rotate out of expensive assets and into cheaper. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really see that if you're just measuring it in dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at a chart from 1979
mm-hmm.
to July 2020, so really recent stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, so that's what, 40 years. It's actually not long enough, really. What you want to see are like 100-year charts, but I don't have 100 years on real estate to gold.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can see is there was a massive run-up from 1979 to a peak, an all-time peak as far as I can see, in 2004.
Oh, four, sorry, yep.
Uh-huh. 2004. So real estate peaked in 2004. I mean, you sort of chat to real estate experts who are slightly older than us who were in the market back in 2004, they'll tell you that they hadn't seen anything like the run-up in real estate between the Sydney Olympics to 2004. just crazy stuff. And you can see that in the real chart. So the pricing it in gold kind of removes all the noise. But actually, real estate's been in a real bear market ever since. So from 2004 to 2020, which is the last 16 years, we've been in a declining property market, which means the gold has been rising faster than real estate prices. And so what we've done is we're back to a pretty significant level of a pretty significant level in real estate, which is we're way back down, and we're at the same level that we were in 2012, 2008, if I look back further, 1995, or you could even say we're at 1989 levels.
It really has to beat the trend, which it's already said it's lowest. So interesting, yeah.
So it's bouncing off this level of 400 ounces to buy the average property. And so last time this happened was 2012, and it bounced up, which means real estate started outperforming gold and it got expensive. But now it's sort of since 2017, real estate prices have come down relative to gold, and we're at that all-important support level, which is where real estate typically is. So what we can see from the gold to real estate chart is that real estate is not expensive. Real estate is historically, or at least for the length of this chart, which is 40 years, below the average price. But you would also say that the momentum is for gold to continue to outperform real estate. So so real estate's probably going to underperform gold, and I would expect that this bear market to be over when it takes 200 ounces to buy an average Sydney property compared to 400 ounces now. So I think that gold is going to go much higher. And even if real estate goes higher, which I think it will, it will go higher more slowly than gold. So it's going to get cheaper. Real estate's going to get cheaper relative to gold from here.
We'll share this chart with the listeners. So if they want to check it out, which is the gold to real estate ratio, it's a really interesting one to look at, actually. Yeah, I like the how it's sitting right at the same level of 2008 and before that. Yeah, you're right. You can go all the way back to 1995. Interesting.
And it's worth mentioning, Jazz, this is not like a John Comino special. You know, this is not something that I personally came up with, although I did generate the chart. This is something that that really good economists in, you know, Britain and the US have been doing for years. And they look at this because if you want to make a lot of money, you've got to be rotating into cheap assets. But when everything looks expensive, it's really hard to tell what those cheap assets are.
That's really good, man. We have never covered that on the podcast, and I think it's great for people who invest in the real estate space, which most of the listeners are, that they understand this chart. It's a bit more advanced stuff than we normally do, but it's all about educating us, and that's what John's helping us with here. So, awesome. Thanks, John. Moving on to the next one. Actually, before we jump on to the next one, anything else that you want to add on the real estate chart, gold to real estate? Or
Look, the only thing I'd add is that the next move is really interesting. So the next move is either, I think, a gold spike or a real estate decline. And I don't see real estate going down.
A gold spike. I'll go with you on that one. It's a gold spike.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting because I mentioned in the last podcast that when gold goes up sharply, it's what they call a silent crash. And that's hard to make sense of until you see this sort of chart. So when gold goes up sharply, everything around it's dropping.
Definitely. And there's a lot of economists out there who, especially the likes of, he's not really an economist. Is Peter Schiff an economist? He's not. But he studies economy.
He's an investor.
When you listen to some of those people who understand how the financial system works and all the money printing, I think you're bang on the money that gold will shoot up a fair bit from here. And can see some of the numbers that have, and it's already doing it. It's already sitting at its all-time high. So it's past its all-time high. So we'll watch it for the next year or so, see how it performs. The other chart that we were keen to discuss, John, was the gold to silver ratios, right? Now, we have been touching silver lately a little bit over this podcast, and thanks for educating listeners on that. I think your knowledge is awesome in this space. Tell us a little bit about the gold to silver ratios and what it's suggesting currently?
Yes. So the gold to silver ratio is it's one that is looked at more often than, you know, the gold to real estate ratio. And what it is what precious metals investors, they want to know if they should, which precious metal they should be in, right? So they want to be in, so the gold to silver ratio is telling you when gold is cheap or when silver's cheap. And right now, so the historic average ratio of gold to silver is about 40 times. So it takes about 40 times the amount of silver to purchase 1 ounce, you know, 40 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. And that's been the sort of historic ratio for many, many years. But actually, the silver appears in the Earth's crust about 15 times more than it does gold. So nature's ratio is 15 to 1, but the financial markets ratio is about 40 to 1. Mm-hmm. And we see that several times. So when the gold to silver ratio is high, it's telling you something's wrong in the market. Everyone's flocking to gold because it's a safe haven. And in March, this is really interesting, it went to about 120 times. So it took 120 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. Mm-hmm. And it's only been over 90 twice in the last 100 years. So in March, the gold to silver ratio is telling us that there were alarm bells, that there was something that was seriously wrong because people were flocking to gold, not to silver. And what's happened recently is that gold is the gold to silver ratio is down to 73 times. So it's come down from 110, 120 down to 73 at the moment. So it's correcting back down to probably 40. But, you know, in the we always say that sort of silver moves harder and faster, but later. So when this all peaks out and the precious metals bull market is over, you would expect the gold to silver ratio to get to 20 to 1. So when you think about that, silver's going to massively outperform gold. It's going to go from currently 73, let's say, down to, times to 23 times. So silver's going to be outperforming gold, and it's gonna, but it's not going to stay there for long because historically, it doesn't last long, and that'll signal the end of the precious metals bull market when it gets to 20 to 1.
I'm looking at the gold chart right now. From the drop that happened, the crash, March crash, gold went back up about roughly 44%, 43-44%. Silver, since then, has gone up by 156%.
Right.
And the ratio, and the ratios are sitting at, the gold to silver ratio is down by 45%. Which at the time of the crash, like you said, it was sitting at the peak, roughly 125. Is it something that can be rotated like gold to real estate, what we were discussing before? Is, do we see a lot of rotation in this space as well, or it's hard to rotate between these two assets?
No, you definitely can. So the reason this ratio is important is because when people have an accumulation strategy, right? So I'm not an advisor in any of this, but when people have a precious metals accumulation strategy because they believe that there's a precious metals bull market, what they typically do is say, when the ratio's over 80 to 1, I'm just going to buy silver because silver's so cheap. And once the ratio dips below 80, as it just did, they're going to start to buy gold as well. So there is a lot of big precious metals guys, like the big boys, that hadn't been buying gold over the last 12 months. They were just buying silver. They've been vindicated.
Interesting.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday where they were estimating $750 silver within 4 or 5 years.
$750 silver in 4 to 5 years.
Yep. The way they got to that price, this is not my, I don't confirm or deny the price, but I'm just relaying it. But the way they got to that was they said, look, we're going to get $15,000 gold and we're going to get that at a ratio of 40 to 1 gold to silver. And you do the maths on that and you get to $750 gold, $750 silver. And bearing in mind, silver's $25 at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a Bitcoin. That's this decade's Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
Unless Bitcoin is this decade's Bitcoin.
we'll come to that when we come to that. Where do you see, I mean, no one's got a crystal ball over there, John, but you study these markets closely and you listen to a lot of the advanced economists talking some of this stuff. When do you see the market, bull market ending, basically? Where do you see that run?
Yeah, I don't know, and that's my official answer. But I heard Peter Schiff say, I've been following Peter Schiff for 15 years now, right? So 13 years, I'm exaggerating. But what he said has stuck in my mind. He said that the bull market will be over when the ratio of gold to the Dow Jones is 1-to-1. So have a think about it. So that is, so if you go to Macro Trends website, you type in gold to Dow ratio, that's every 40 years or so, the Dow and gold go to 1-to-1 ratio, which means one, you know, like if the Dow's 30,000, gold will be 30,000 an ounce. Mm-hmm. So this first happened in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
Then it happened again in 1980. So we're seeing about 40 to 45 years. Mm-hmm. And so the last time gold and the Dow were 1-to-1 was 1980.
Mm-hmm.
We're 40 years. It's 40 years this year. So Peter Schiff says that the precious metals bull market and the stock market bear market will be over when gold and the Dow are 1-to-1. It's pretty hard to conceive of. But so if gold's going to get to $15,000, it means that the Dow is going to crash to $15,000.
What does that mean for the U.S. currency? Where will that be at that point if gold is going to hit 15,000 is a question, right?
Lower.
way lower. Interesting. It's really interesting stuff, man.
This sort of stuff is, I mean, you can get engrossed in it. So just for the listeners, where I get all these ratios, except for the real estate one, is it's a website called Macro Trends, macrotrends.net, and it's a rabbit warren of charts and ratios and, like, you know, inflation-adjusted gold price for 100 years, and all the charts are there for you. So it's really interesting. Go for it.
The other one that we wanted to touch on, and let me know if there's more to add to this before we jump on to the gold to Dow ratio. What's the significance of the ratio between gold to Dow, and what is it suggesting currently to us?
Well, again, in terms of the significance, it's telling us whether the Dow Jones is relatively expensive. So it's also telling us, if you look at a long-term chart, 100 years of the gold to the Dow Jones, you can see if we're in a bull market or a bear market, or like a secular bull market or a bear market. Now, this chart kind of vindicates what we were saying before about real estate. So here the Dow Jones has never been as expensive in real terms as it was during the NASDAQ bubble in 2000. That was the all-time high. It was very expensive. It was more expensive than the other peaks. The other peak was in the 60s, and the other peak before that was in 1929, before a massive crash. So it was flashing overvalued. Mm-hmm. And we've been in a secular bear market in the Dow Jones ever since. Mm-hmm. Now, it got down pretty low, and then in 2008 to 2011, it went sideways, and we've been in a bull market since 2011. Now, the bull market in the Dow peaked in 2018, July 2018, and we've resumed the bear market. So from 2018, July 2018 to now, the Dow Jones has started moving down again in real terms.
So basically, if you were a perfectionist, then in that case, you would have sold your stocks around that 2018 June, July mark, and then
Yes, but you can never get the timing right.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying, if you are a perfectionist, but no one is. There's no such thing as perfection. It's close. It's just some of the indicators that tell you that maybe it's the top, but that doesn't mean whether it's the top or not.
Yeah. Yep.
I am assuming the S&P 500 is kind of a similar story when compared to gold in terms of the ratios.
Yeah, exactly the same shape. It peaked in 2000 as well. The gold to S&P ratio is telling us exactly the same story. That also peaked in October 2018.
Yep.
and it's been in a and it's been declining ever since. So the big move in March of this year totally altered the chart.
Mm-hmm.
So you had gold essentially, you know, not falling or going up slightly, and the Dow Jones plummeting. But what's really interesting is the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, they're all back at their all-time highs. But gold has moved a lot higher since the March crash.
Yeah.
So in real terms, the Dow Jones has fallen. The Dow Jones has corrected down. So it's again, these charts remove all the white noise from the stock market, and it tells you what we're in a bear market in the Dow Jones, and it's probably going to keep going for about 3 to 4 years until gold to the Dow is 1 to 1.
What is the unit of measure? Is it gold? Is it US dollar? Or is it Bitcoin? Right. Maybe Bitcoin is going to be the outperformer over the next 10 years. We don't know. None of this is financial advice, right? And in fact, all the guests that we had on the show don't even believe in it in first place, right? But when I look at the charts, and I'm purely looking at it from a numbers perspective, right? Well, we can only deal with the facts at hand. And the facts at hand over here tells me that stock market in every shape and form is crashing if I change the unit of measure.
That's the message. So as you know, I'm not a Bitcoin guy, but but the principles are right here. The principles are right. Like, what do you want to measure stuff with? Do you want to measure it with dollars that you know are losing value, or do you want to measure it with other things, which are admittedly, you know, volatile as well? But over long periods of time, it does iron out the noise. So, yeah, what's your – it's, you know, Peter Schiff, let's talk. I heard an interview with him, and he said, you know, he goes, I'm about 6 foot. He said, look, he said, yeah, I'm about 6 foot. And he said, measuring things in dollars is like measuring me in a ruler that gets shorter every time you measure it. You know, he said, you know, like the next time you come back a year later and he's 6.5 foot because you've changed the measure. And that's what measuring things in dollars is. If you're going to inflate it, well, it becomes a useless unit of measure. So interesting.
So it's, yeah, really, it's that. So that's the interesting part, right? So we buy real estate. You and I love real estate, right? Yep. David does. David is not on the show. We started in real estate. We daily look at the numbers. We talk about it every week. But the bigger deal here is really, yes, real estate is going up, true, against the dollar, right?
Yep.
Gold is going up, true. Well, gold is the real money anyways, right? So that can't even be argued. Bitcoin can be argued whether it's here to stay or not. 10 years is not long enough history for it to really cement its presence in the system, right?
It comes back to this whole idea of, you know, what's the price and what's the value? You know, we know the price of everything, and people are chasing price, you know. I don't care if the gold price goes up or down. I don't even care if my real estate goes up and down, because I know what I own is valuable, and I'm not interested in the kind of short term movements, because I've just ridded myself of paper speculations, and I've just accumulated tangible, you know, manifestations of wealth, and it's great. It means I don't care about the price, because what's important to me is the value.
Interesting. I think this, as an investor, every investor should be looking at this stuff. We talk a lot about property, but then we forget that how to do the rotations and when to work out whether it's expensive or cheap, kind of thing. These are just pure facts sitting in front of us. So it's great, mate, for you to share your knowledge. And I don't know where you have been hiding all this time, but... anything else that you would like to add, buddy?
Well, I just, you know, I wanted to say something about it, about volatility at the moment. Volatility is very interesting. And I was thinking of it when we were talking about the gold to Dow ratio, because we've never lived in a more volatile time. The volatility in our lives is huge. You know, we off air, we talk about, you know, the volatility in Turkey, the Turkish lira crashing. We talk about the streets of New York. We talk about the streets of Chicago. We're all, you know, essentially sort of under house arrest. We live in really volatile times, and everything's extremely volatile except for the stock market. And this is the strangest thing. The Federal Reserve, which is meeting in Jackson Hole at the moment, which is so this is a very interesting week for Fed policy as well.
That's
so,
on Thursday, isn't it? Tomorrow.
Friday our time.
Friday, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. So there might be a big move in the dollar and currencies and commodities by the time this comes out. But you can't really get rid of volatility. All you can do is transfer it or delay it, right? So what's happened is the Fed have come in to intervene to save the stock market. And what they've done is they've pushed all that volatility into the currency market, commodities market. And in a sense, they've pushed that volatility that would have been quarantined into the stock market. They've pushed that volatility into our lives, onto the streets of Chicago and onto the streets of New York. So I've been thinking a lot about volatility, risk, and I'm not a big fan of Yankee, but that's a really interesting way to look at it as well. Have we just pushed the volatility into other asset classes, or have we pushed it into the future and it's going to spring up on us again?
Two things that I wanted to quickly touch on and have your take on it. One is the Buffett indicator. That indicator is even relevant anymore or not, purely because of the amount of money that Fed is pumping in the markets just to keep stocks from crashing, essentially, right? So one, what are your thoughts on that? And secondly, on the Buffett buying the mining stocks.
Okay. So the first thing is the Buffett indicator. So the Buffett indicator is when this, actually jump in if I've got this wrong, but it's when the value of the equities markets exceeds 100% of a country's GDP.
And it's sitting at 180%.
180% right now. So it's flashing overvalued. Now, I'm not an equities guy. But that makes a lot of sense to me. Now, the only problem with the Buffett indicator as a concept is that it may not matter that that the stock market indices are greater than 100% of GDP if you derive a lot of your income from other countries. So if you're Apple and you're getting 60% of your revenue from China, does it matter that Apple is as big as, you know, bigger than the GDP of the US, which it isn't, but I'm not sure it matters if you've got a highly globalized economy and you've got sources of income from all different countries, then maybe the measuring it against the GDP doesn't matter as much. But smarter people than me, and Warren Buffett's the greatest, right? If he's saying that that's a big sell signal to him, I'd be going with that.
When you look at Fed trying to prevent market from dropping at any cost, and the tool that they have got in their hand to combat is unbeatable, which is just add another zero, add another zero, add another zero kind of thing. It just makes you think whether it will happen or not. And when you take into account the number of people, which we have discussed before, I think retiring in US is about 10,000, and in Europe it's about 10,000 as well per day. So that's 20,000 people retiring per day. And their source of income or the money that they've got is invested, obviously, in the stock market, where the dividends gets paid from. Whether they will really let that happen, but what they can do is inflate their way out, which is keep printing, and that's what's happening, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the debt is unrepayable at the moment. The budget deficit so far in the US is I think $3 to $4 trillion, and $1 trillion. And to give you an idea of how much that is, if you lent me $1 trillion today and I repaid it, I repaid $1 every minute, it would take me 37,000 years to pay off $1 trillion. Right? So the debt's unrepayable. So the question now becomes, how does the US default? How do we all default? We're in the same boat. How do we default? There are two ways you can default. One, the first way is you put up your hand and you say, look, we can't meet our obligation. That's sort of what happened in 1971, where they closed the gold window. They said, we've run out of gold. We're going to just replace gold with the US dollar. That was essentially a default. The other way you can default is to print your money into oblivion. You say, look, yeah, sure, you'll get your money back. Good luck buying a loaf of bread with it. That's the other way you default. Now, not everyone can do the second option. Not everyone can default. So most European countries are subject to the European Central Bank, and they can't print their own currency. So if Greece goes broke, they can't print euro or drachma. So they just have to put their hand up. But the United States, Australia, New Zealand, we can all inflate our money away in the second option, which is a dishonest default. And I just think that they're going to do that. And that brings us on to the second part of your question, which is why did Buffett buy Barrick Gold? So he got into gold, and Warren Buffett buying gold, or Berkshire Hathaway buying gold, is significant for two reasons. One is that he's been anti-gold for a long, long time, since the 90s. You know, he used to call it a pet rock. He used to say, you know, you just dig it out of the ground, put it into another hole, and then put a security guard next to it. Hopefully not a Victorian security guard. Otherwise, they would be sleeping with the gold. But no, too soon. So Warren Buffett's anti-gold, and he bought Barrick Gold, which is huge. The second reason why it's important is Warren Buffett's a value investor. So he must look at these gold stocks and gold itself as good value right now. So it's very interesting. Now, just in fairness to Warren Buffett, he doesn't like gold. He technically didn't buy gold. He bought gold mining stocks. And the reason for that is Berkshire Hathaway is too big to buy bars of gold. They would move the market. There's not enough. They have to buy stocks. There's not anything liquid enough. But very interesting.
It's interesting times. Definitely interesting times that we're living in, and will be interesting to watch what happens. But that's the whole point of discussing all this content, that people who are out there, if they want to arm themselves, John is man of wisdom. He's sharing his knowledge with us. So I appreciate all that, John.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.